welcome, welcome. Here we are again on Monday, April 5th, 2021. This is T-Tate with his sidekick, Mr. Pearsall. Man, you back in your old familiar. I'm almost stuck. I mean, I didn't know whether or not you was in your old familiar territory or what. So talk to me, Mr. Pearsall. What's going on in the back of you, man? I mean, there's a lot of stuff going on. The listeners and some of the viewers understand, what in the world are we looking at? Are we at the mall? Are we, you know, over at somebody else's house? What's going on back there?
I'm back in the lab now. You know, I'm back at home. I'm downstairs in the area that surrounds me with all the positivity that comes with the guy that's involved with all these great Watkins men. If you look behind me to my left, you see some jerseys. You look behind me to my right, you see some jerseys. You see some pictures. Around me is all the energy that all of these Watkins men give me. And as I go through this session, as well as my life, I look around and see all the great things that they're doing. Again, if you go around my room, there are many, many more. But in my basement sits a lot of the memories that come along with being involved with such magnanimous individuals that we call Watkins men.
Oh, man, I'm excited. You know, I almost forgot last week, but I'm surely going to remember this week because I got some hate mail. It's obviously you're not checking the email as often as I am. And then when I check it, you know, I sadly erase a lot of stuff, but I got a piece of hate mail. And I'm going to let the listeners know and you know about this piece of mail. But before I get there, you know, Mr. Pearson, I always try to start off and let everyone know, you know, what's going on here. Because a lot of people come to our shows and they want to know what in the world is going on. I mean, clearly what we like to do is just make sure no one goes through culture shock or some type of shock. I misunderstand what it is that we are attempting to do. But you know, one thing for sure, I just want to do the disclaimer, which, you know, you and I always chuckle, but this stuff is serious, Mr. Pearsall. This stuff is serious now. I mean, if I'm getting the hate, why didn't they put your name in this email? Oh, I got the email. I printed it off. You know, I just printed it off, so I want to make sure you know I got it. But nonetheless, I'm not going to rat anyone out. I mean, they created this email or this email address. So I haven't responded yet. So I'm going to look for guidance from you to respond. But the disclaimer is no more than, you know, the views and opinion of the Watkins Awards show are the views and opinion of T-Tate and J. Everett Pearsall. You know, better known to me because I try to respect the guys that are younger. They always call him Mr. Pearsall. But I get a pure joy out of watching these guys grow up over time. And what I mean grow up, they come in through college, they go into the professional world. Eventually, you know, a lot of these guys get married. And Mr. Pearsall changes to Everett. Yeah, so I like to just say Mr. Pearsall, so I get a kick out of it. But the views and opinions are those of T-Tate and Mr. Pearsall. And so don't blame BBS Radio or any of our great sponsors or anybody that's, you know, associated with BBS Radio. Blame us. Just blame us, just like you blame me this time with this cat-picking email. But you know, in the background, you see me and you see the Watkins Award trophy. So now you know what these young men are actually, they're actually awarded with this trophy. Now, one of the gentlemen, sometimes we have four, sometimes we have five, and sometimes we have six. But one of the gentlemen will be the standard bearer. And Mr. Pearsall and I will get a little bit more into that. But one of the things, as I say all the time, please, 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 listeners from the past who have listened to, this is our 10th episode. Man, you know, time flies, but this is our 10th episode. And I don't want people to say, you know, I hear this all the time. Well, there are new listeners coming in all the time. As one time I told you, we're getting listeners from all over the world. I know this for a fact that they're coming in from all over the world. So, you know, clearly I just want to start like we always start this show and just letting you know a little bit about the National Alliance of African American Athletes and a little bit about the Watkins Award. So with that said, Mr. Pearsall, I always love starting off with Franklin D. Watkins, better known, Mr. Franklin D. Watkins, but I love starting off with him. Tell us a little bit about Franklin D. Watkins, Mr. Pearsall.
Again, as you mentioned, the name of my organization is the National Alliance of African American Athletes. And in 1889, we got our 501c3 status from the IRS. But before that, there were individuals that were traveling around the small city of Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, the capital of Pennsylvania, where I lived and worked for IBM at the time. And as we traveled around the city to put together programs to uplift youth all over the city, there were individuals that stood above others. There are those who really were a pillar of the community and those who had touched more kids than any other. And so we corralled Mr. Watkins, being one of eight, and said we really need to try to start an organization that really has a target and, more importantly, effectiveness at giving back to the community and actually doing things all over Harrisburg that could be duplicated throughout the country. And so Franklin D. Watkins was a man in the Harrisburg community that was just not just a family man, not just a God-fearing man, not just a coach, not just a counselor, not just a confidant, not just a mentor, but a person that was looked up and touched the lives of hundreds and probably thousands of individuals that went through the various programs in the Harrisburg community. And so we engaged him in helping us to start this organization. And before we got to the point in 1989, wherewith we actually got an organization that had a 501c3 status and a tax ID number, he passed away. And so moving forward and developing our programs, one of which is an award that we decided to give out to the top scholar athlete in the country, we decided to name that award after Mr. Franklin D. Watkins. And let me just tell you, there really is a lot of significance to that. As I've mentioned many times over, we could have named this award after a household name. But we decided not to do that because we wanted people to know that in your house, in your community, in your church, in your company, in your business, a peer of yours is a Franklin D. Watkins, and so are you. And so as you go throughout your daily routines, individuals that you come in contact with, people that you have influence over, you are Franklin D. Watkins. You just need to exercise your ability to have a positive impact on your community and those with whom you come in contact with. Franklin D. Watkins, again, is in all of us. And we named the award after him because we wanted to make sure that everyone knew that it is within you to create the next individual that can change the lives of individuals all over the country. People look at Franklin D. Watkins and say all the time, who is he? And just as you asked me, but really Franklin D. Watkins is you. And it is something that you should be doing on a day in and day out basis. We embraced it as an organization, and every individual, from myself, the founder and executive director, to every board member, to every volunteer, to every committee member that's a part of our organization, they embrace the concept of being that Franklin D. Watkins, embracing that community and making a change.
That's outstanding. I mean, clearly you gave the type of description of Mr. Franklin D. Watkins that anyone can put their feet in his shoes. I mean, you didn't make the shoes so big that somebody said, man, I can't wear that guy's shoes. I mean, that's just too much. I mean, you made him to be, which he has always been, a plain old community guy, just somebody that wanted to help. Now, with that said, now talk about the National Alliance of African-American Athletes. I mean, a lot of times people keep asking me, which is okay. It's okay that they ask me, well, what is the difference between the Watkins Award and the National Alliance of African-American Athletes? And I go into, my explanation, but let's hear what Mr. J. Everett Pearsall's explanation is of the National Alliance of African-American Athletes, which we call the NAAA.
Also called the Alliance. And so I'll say, as I use many times over, an example for many of us who understand and or know what the Heisman Trophy is. Many people don't know who created it and who gives it away. And so people who even aren't in sports, they know what the Heisman Trophy is. It's an award given out to the top athlete in college football. But what they don't know is the Downtown Athletic Club is the organization that actually goes through the process of naming the individual that will get the Heisman Trophy. The National Alliance of African-American Athletes, as I mentioned earlier, is a 501c3 nonprofit organization that is built on the premise of using athletes and the industry of sports to uplift and empower the disenfranchised community. We do it in many ways, the Watkins Award just being one of them. Through SAT clinics and ACT clinics, we do mentoring, we do football programs, we do programs that uses yachting as an avenue to get through to youth. We do a conference that emphasizes the business side of sports and the social side of sports, how to get athletes involved in your community. And so there are a plethora of events that we've used over the last 30 years to reach our youth. But the really overall overarching premise of why we exist is that we know that disenfranchised youth look up to athletics and those athletes that are on the television week in and week out as an example of what they can, should, and may be able to do to get out of their current economic situations. We just want to use that to let them know that there are individuals that represent the Watkins Award and the organization at large that emphasize education, that emphasize giving back to the community, that emphasize character, that emphasize really doing the right thing, being a good citizen of this country, giving back in every way that they possibly can, being a good, God-fearing family man, the best husband, the best wife that they possibly can be, and being a person that our youth would look up to in order to make them understand that this is really what life is all about. Success is not measured in dollars, but it's measured in happiness and those with whom you're able to help and bring up to the status that either you're in or even beyond.
I mean, I'm blown out of the water by, these descriptions that you're giving, not only of the Watkins Award, but of, as you indicated, in short, the Alliance. Tell me, however, you've seen a lot of young men that come through this program. Talk about the parents. I mean, what are some of the things that you see the parents learning from the Alliance?
Well, again, when you talk about individuals that were influenced at all levels, again, many people focus on the Watkins Award. I'm going to end with that, but I'm going to start out with the fact that we do programs. And let's just say we do a football camp. One of the things that we make mandatory is that the parents also attend that football camp. Let's just say we do an SAT clinic or a mentoring program. We make it mandatory that the parent also attends that program because we understand that it's important to build a foundation around not just babysitting an individual, but building a program around the support structure that helps them to understand it's not just important to attend, but I support you in doing so. The Watkins family and the Watkins Award is not an award just for the individual that we're noting as an alumni for the Watkins Award. It is a family award. It is an award that not only embraces the brother, the sister, the mother and or father and or mother that may have been involved with the uprising of that individual and the foundation around that individual, but it also involves the community around him. It may be a cousin, it may be a coach, it may be a good friend, it may be a mentor, it may be a pastor, but whatever individual around that really gets an opportunity to celebrate that individual for the Watkins Award, and that Watkins family gets an opportunity to tell them thank you and also show them a great deal of appreciation through a year-long process of rewarding and recognizing the individual for that. And so the parents, the cousins, the brothers, the sisters, all those individuals, it does truly take a village if that village is willing to embrace that individual, but it's different for every kid, I'll tell you. It's different for every kid. Every kid has a different family dynamic, a different support structure. There is no one cookie cut thing I can tell you about any family when you go one to another within the Watkins family. However, we embrace them all and we encourage them all that whatever they did to make that individual part of the Watkins family, do it for another.
Well, you know, you talk about the pre-Watkins Award. Now let's talk about post Watkins Award. I mean, what is the true value, in your words, once this young man has gotten in college? Let's skirt through the college thing, because I know, you know, we try to touch on a lot of things. But once that young man has gone through college, a lot of people think that it's over and done with. That, you know, what is the true value of the Alliance? I mean, clearly they don't need you once they leave college. And you and I know that's when it all begins, when they need a support system in place. They need somebody that's going to hold them accountable once they leave college. But, you know, in essence, these young men, this is in most cases the first time they've had an opportunity to experience these type of organizations like the NFL and these major corporations that are bidding for their likeness, bidding for their time. We know that there's a lot of different ways that they can make money. Some of them are signing contracts for the first time with all this money. And we hear the pitfalls of a lot of these athletes who all of a sudden got this money and they doing some pretty crazy things. But what is the true value of the Alliance now to help them to navigate through this craziness after they didn't finish college and now have got to that point? They are getting drafted. They got drafted. Now they're in the system.
So let me just touch on a couple of things, because you really just said a whole lot with the statement that you just mentioned. The first thing that you said was people talk about what we do at different levels, and you particularly pinpointed what we do after college. I'll tell you that we're not here to usher anybody to the NFL. What we're here to do is to help people through transitions. And so if the Alliance as an organization can help someone to transition from high school to college, great. From college to the NFL, great. From college to the NBA, great. From college to their master's degree into the business world, great. Into an entrepreneurial endeavor, great. We're all about transitions. And so as an organization, not only do we have individuals within the organization that have gone through such things and are professionals at every level, we also have Watkins alumni that have gone through it at all aspect of what an individual might go through, whether they're graduating again to be a professional athlete or not. It doesn't matter to us. where you're headed, our idea is that the amount of time that it takes to transition from one thing to the next should be minimized. And everything that we can do to help you to minimize that transition puts you in a better position to be happy and effective. More specifically, as you talk about the fact that we help people transition to the NFL, in your example, as one of many examples for individuals that have gone through the Watkins program. You talk about people do crazy things with their money. I'm not certainly sure of what you mean by crazy things. What would you have done if you were a millionaire at the age of 21 or 22? What would many people who are listening have done if they were all of a sudden going from eating peanut butter and jelly sandwiches, maybe peanut butter with no jelly, to being a millionaire? What would they do with that money? What would be considered crazy? And so that's a relative phrase. But the idea that there are individuals that need to be mentored and tutored through this process, not just from us, but from people who are experts to help them to avoid the pitfalls of making that next step, certainly we do. We have people who have been professional athletes, who have made millions of dollars. We have people who have dealt with people who are professional athletes, who have made hundreds of millions of dollars, that are aligned with us as an organization to make sure that they're able to advise people, individuals at all aspects, whether it's a parent, whether it's an athlete, whether it's someone around that athlete, on the right things to do. And more importantly, what I've always told people is that if I put Watkins men and people who are related to Watkins men and people who are in the sports industry as an athlete or what have you better for themselves and their family, they're now in a better position to give back to the community, right? And so we're going to align them, no matter who they are, with regard to being related to organization. But more importantly, the people that are involved know that we have the resources to make sure that they can make the right decisions at all phases of transition. And, you know, when they get to that level where those decisions are larger from a dollar perspective, then it's the same decision. It's the right decision. And we help them to be aligned with the people that can lead them in the right direction and do the right thing.
You know, I know that we always are on a time crunch, and there are some people that I have spoken to that wish our show was 2 hours opposed to 1 hour. But I just want to make sure that people do know that we recognize the top African American scholarship in baseball as well. So, you know, we just, to my knowledge, we haven't had someone to go into baseball yet, or have we?
No, we've gotten guys that have been drafted. Several have been drafted into baseball, but none of them have actually gone into baseball. Probably most notably, Jameis Winston would have been a first-round draft pick.
Okay. Yeah. And so, you know, again, this award identifies the top African-American scholar athlete in football, basketball, and baseball. And I want people to know, as we stated on some previous shows, I just get so paranoid about something I said before, and then somebody sends me a nasty email, and then you don't read the emails, Mr. Pearsall. You know, I got to take all the weight. But, you know, clearly, we will consider an athlete from another sport, but he can't just be an average athlete. He has to be able to, you know, certainly hold the same standard in his sport as these young men who come in are in the top five, you know, in the nation at their particular position. So this isn't just because he's a good athlete. It's not just because he's a great athlete. He has to be an extraordinary athlete in order to meet these standards. And then also be an extraordinary student. We expect certain things from our students. And, you know, some of these guys are doing things in school that people just don't recognize. You know, sometimes it just happens and it just gets passed. someone. I mean, we got guys who are trailblazers, you know, on this academic side. They're not just making a lot of noise on the football field. Man, these guys are really tearing up the classroom. And sadly, the recognition for what they do in the classroom really doesn't get any focus. The focus is, of course, out on the football field, the basketball court, and certainly in the in the baseball field or on the baseball field. I was thinking about the stadium because, again, you know, you and I have seen things and seen them with our own eyes. We have been involved with the Alliance to the point that most people who listen to our show or have listened to our show have not had an opportunity to really find themselves listening to the 10 episodes. And with the exception of one, 9 of them being with those athletes, seeing these type of athletes just week after week after week after week. And I know they trying to say we're gonna run out of athletes. Ain't enough of them around. They gotta recycle these guys now. You know, they putting a mask on them and shades and a cap and giving them another name. You know, it's not this many African American athletes with this type of potential in the United States. I mean, clearly, if you don't see it, what they see is what they see on TV, what they hear on the radio, and of course, what they hear from people who really don't know. And we ask you to go by the website, www.naaa.com. Support us. We have several sponsors that we talk about from time to time. And we just want you to support our sponsors. I mean, support our sponsors. Our sponsors are trying to help us out. They come to the Watkins Award event. And we would encourage you in 2022, right, Mr. Pearsall? We're going to have us a Watkins Award somewhere in the United States. Is that correct?
Live and direct in Washington, D.C., no doubt.
Ooh, boy. Okay. Well, more details are coming soon. I'm sure Mr. Pearsall is going to make sure that we know the date, the time, and the location. I want people to be able to go to the website and purchase their tickets. As a matter of fact, this is what we're going to do. Maybe next week, we're going to have... Oh, I hear that music. What? Didn't have the answer for it. The music is coming in. We'll be back on the other side. And special guest is here. And that is Mr. Darrell Richard. You want to talk about an interesting story? Oh, we got one for you. So we'll be, Mr. Pearsall and I'll be right back. And thank you so much for being here with us as always. Look at Mr. Pearsall. You may do a break dance. All you gotta do is put your mind to it.
Exotic Car Sharing by Kirby Road is a full-service car sharing company that has been in business for over 21 years. Based out of Palatine, Illinois, our company allows its members the ability to own fractional ownership of exotic cars at a fraction of the costs. Our share plans include reservations for weekend or weekly ride sharing. Our members get to choose from a Bentley one weekend to the McLaren 570S the next. No long paperwork, expensive maintenance, or expensive insurance requirements. Exotic Car Sharing has the fleet and capabilities to service all of our clients with quality luxury vehicles delivered at your doorstep. Register on our website at exoticcarsharing.com or call us at 888-264-3327.
Oh, yeah. We're back. Man, I didn't have to say a word. Boy, those commercials came right in. Mr. Pearsall, what you doing? You and Doug working something out over there? What, man? What's going on?
Oh, Doug is representing, man. Doug is on the money. He's doing his thing. He's doing the way it's supposed to be done.
Well, hey, without further ado, you know, this next young man we bringing in here is Daryl Richard. Very, very special. I mean, when I say this guy is the quintessential of a scholar athlete and what he has been able to accomplish we're not talking about a 70-year-old man, 80-year-old man. We're talking about a young man that has truly, truly exceeded all expectations. But Daryl was a 2004 Watkins Award honoree, and he's from Destrehan, Louisiana, right outside of New Orleans. He was, you know, a five-star high school football player, so let's get it straight. And he was an academic All-American. Now, here's the part that I want people to understand, and I want to make it real clear. This was 2004 now, and he was the first African-American valedictorian of his high school in 2004. Now, I know the numbers. I mean, to be able to pull something like that off. Now, Daryl came on up here to Georgia, another one of my Georgia guys, and he came on up. But I'm sorry, University of Georgia. This is a Georgia Tech guy. He goes to Georgia Tech, which he was an academic All-American there at Georgia Tech as well. But he was the first football player to graduate with 2 degrees. Now, he graduated not only with his bachelor's, but Daryl got his MBA before his athletic eligibility was exhausted. And he was drafted in the NFL by the New England Patriots, and he's a member of the College Hall of Fame in addition to other professional organizations. And again, I just want to say, this young man is truly an academic All-American. And with that said, Daryl, are you around?
I'm here.
Oh, my goodness. How you doing, Daryl Richard?
I'm good. I started reminiscing when you talked about Atlanta. I just thought about all that pizza you fed me, man. And it brought back some good memories.
Well, I wasn't going to say anything about the pizza. I ain't know who may have been listening.
I'm sorry. We're going to forget it. You say Tyrone took care of me. That's it.
Okay. Daryl is the first guy that came into a Chicago pizza franchise and had that look on his face that he was going to eat a deep dish pizza, a lot of meat, by himself. But that pizza humbled Daryl like it has done so many men. But it was certainly a pleasure having you to come over to the restaurant, Daryl. That's one of the things that we try to talk about with the not only the Watkins Award, but the Alliance. And what we try to do in helping young men like you to navigate through that college atmosphere. Now, before we even get to college, when you were down there in Louisiana, what When, and I ask everybody the same question, but when did you realize that you was going to focus on your academics and your athletics and become this extraordinary scholar athlete in high school?
I can tell you those things didn't happen at the same time. It was a difference. So I was with some of our teachers considered a behavior issue in middle school. Thought I was always pretty smart, but some work I just refused to do. Had a smart mouth, but honestly, high school was an opportunity for me to start over. And when I had that chance to start over as a freshman in high school, my head coach had also just got the head coaching job of my high school. So I literally had a blank slate. I wasn't, it wasn't a concern as to what folks' image was or a perception of Darryl was. And it was a chance to really start fresh. But honestly, what people don't know, I took all honors and AP classes in high school. And I literally, the first week of school, first day, I go into my honors English 1 class. And I proceed to sit down. And I'm asked the question, are you sure you're in the right class?
Whoa.
So, wow. I mean, let's be frank. I'm in the South. I'm in Louisiana. 1898, you get Plessy versus Ferguson coming out of Louisiana. And I was literally asked, was I in the right class? I was the only one who looked like me in that class. Big, black, the whole nine. And I'm walking around with a book sack full of all my books in my gym bag, my football bag. So at that point, I decided, you know what? The same way I compete on the field, I'm going to compete in the classroom, and I'm going to embarrass people. That was really the approach, the motivation that I took. And 4 years later, I think you kind of talked about it, took us 50 years after Brown versus Board of Education. I was fortunate enough to be named my high school valedictorian and the only summa cum laude graduate. So to me, that competition has been part of who I am. No matter what avenue or field I'm on, if I feel like I'm giving a shot, I'm going to try to beat you and make you remember me.
Well, you come from a very humble family. And, when you were in college, your moms made that trip every weekend that you played a home game. I mean, it was no doubt that there was some real serious love between you and your moms, but you had other siblings as well. But tell us, how hard was she on you? What do you attribute her and your development before you got to Georgia Tech?
Dude, I can go back probably. I don't know, my mom remember this. So one of my things that people find funny about me right now, they say outright like a girl. And it was the mere fact of when I was young, I used to write so sloppy. It was bad. I didn't even spell my whole name. Like most of my teachers would tell you, I never add the L to my name. And sometimes I spelled it with one R. And I'm not talking about a baby. I'm talking about a second, third grader who's just rushing through everything. So I remember, I think I had to be in third or fourth grade one time. Like she literally just started ripping my stuff up and making me do it over again. And I think at that time, you don't take it as much as like you just being difficult. But I think that may have began to plant a seed as to, just do it right. If you do it right, it won't be that long. And because that's me. I always like to move on to the next thing. But if you don't get stuff done the right way and the job is not complete at a right level of proficiency, it's almost like you didn't do anything. So I would say, kind of taking that. And then also, watching my mama grind, we started over. I don't have maybe a blindside type story, but I have my own story. And with that being said, we had to start over. So watching her go out, approach her career, raise 4 kids on her own to make it happen, those kind of things plant seeds to where you got to get out there and make things happen if you want to have success in this life. So you take that with some of the combinations of lessons in my village. I am probably so grateful for the village I've had. I probably didn't recognize it. Y'all are a part of my village. Over the years, people who have come into my life and pushed me. At times where I thought I kind of had maxed out, you have people who kind of just, they push the boundaries as to how I think, how I approach life, and really the chances that I might take. So it's been a combination of all those things through the years.
So you at Tech, And everyone knows how, I mean, Georgia Tech has one of the top 10 engineering programs in the world. They got Nobel Prize winners over there walking that campus. People, you know, sometimes don't really peel that onion back and try to figure out, you know, exactly just how difficult it is to not only get into a school like that, which isn't really that difficult, is staying there. So you at Tech, how in the world do you get to become, you get to a point and you all of a sudden, while you playing football, working on an MBA, man, what in the world is going on inside of your head?
I think it's a combination of maybe courage and crazy. In crisis, all mixed into one. So there is a story behind it. My first year, I was able to play. I was a freshman All-American. You know, I was the D tackle that Georgia Tech felt that they could never get. You know, because that was one of the areas where we struggled in recruiting, because D tackles don't want to do schoolwork, especially at that type of school. Again, it was kind of one of those challenges. You hear when they bring us on board that Georgia Tech has had, in my time, a 50% retention rate first year to second year. So, I mean, for folks who are listening, half of the freshmen don't come back, either by failing or it's just they find something else to do. A matter of fact, for my Watkins brothers on the phone, they may take a ride up to Athens and go to that school instead.
Oh, my goodness.
Marcus, oh yeah, Trent, I'm gonna start going through the line, you know, around my time. And great freshman year, spring game after my freshman season, I literally, you know, stand around a pile. So a lesson learned the hard way, do helicopter tackle and ACL, MCL, meniscus, gone, blown out. So, I had to call the Donahue's triad. They had to basically reconstruct my knee. So since I couldn't compete on the field that year, I decided to load up on classes. So I actually took a 21-hour semester as I was doing my rehab and kind of the non-physical coming back to football stuff, and was able to get slightly ahead. And that kind of set me up to – not kind of. It set me up to graduate in 3 years. And I can tell you as a result of that – most people don't know, but a lot of this this free agency that's now come about with the graduate transfer rule, I probably was one of the subjects who was studied to figure out should you do that, because I actually considered transferring from Georgia Tech and I wanted to go to Florida. Our business school was not very lenient in who they let in their program. So one thing Georgia Tech is very rich on is tradition. And you know, doing things their way. So they don't mind making it extremely difficult, because they want folks to know once you come out of there that you met the bar, not just only to get in, but to get out. Because anybody who goes to Georgia Tech, we don't graduate, we get out. They put me through the ringer. I had to do internships, show that I can actually attend a class that was full of business folks. Because the Tech Business School, you have to have some work in industry to do that. So they made me do that. I was fortunate enough to graduate my undergrad with high honors. So we don't do the cum laudes at Georgia Tech. We have honors. Right. And so they accepted me into the MBA program, and I was able to finish that. So by the time I played my bowl game at the end of my 4 years, I had already had my MBA. And, I mean, I'm still benefiting from that today. Folks ask why I chose a school like that. It was a 40-year commitment, not a 4-year commitment. And every day I'm presented with opportunities, I think, you know, my time in Atlanta has really set me up to be successful.
Well, you know what? I can't, you know, I was doing this because I was honoring you. I mean, man, for you to pull off what you pulled off down there in spite of an injury and then get drafted, man, let me drop the microphone and give it to J. Everett Pitt. So I'm through, Everett. Ain't nothing else I can ask this man.
No, man. I knew I was on borrowed time at that point. The body only can take so much.
Darryl Richard, a.k.a. D. Rich, a.k.a.
My God.
Mr. Richard, a.k.a. Mr. Georgia Tech, a.k.a. Big Gumbo. Welcome to the show, brother.
Thank you, Balls. Thank you, thank you, thank you. And look, it's Richard down here. You know these Frenchies. We Richard.
Richard. You know, if I were there, I would say Richard. I want to tell you that coming down and seeing you play as a high school senior, sitting next to your mother, watching you absolutely dominate the line of scrimmage, knowing that Destrehan High School was the high school with which Ed Reed had been the Hall of Famer and gone on to play at the University of Miami and done big things, as you know, and as everyone seems to know. You had every school on your bumper. Miami, of course. LSU, of course. Every big school around wanting a big gumbo to come play for them. And yet you decided to go to Georgia Tech and take on the academic challenge. I have two questions. What mindset, and you touched on it a little bit, but I want you to expound, makes you want to take on that challenge? And then secondly, tell some of our listeners some of the sacrifices that you had to go through, both through high school and in through college, in order to be successful at taking on that academic challenge.
All right, I'm going to start with the first one, and I'm going to do it by saying kind of who my five finalists were. You know, we didn't have a lot of money, folks, so being able to take official visits, that was like vacations for me. So my five officials, I went to the U. So went to Miami, Colorado, Notre Dame, LSU, they counted, but it really didn't count, USC and Georgia Tech. Atlanta, I had been to Atlanta before, but I think what folks miss a lot of times, not knowing where Georgia Tech is located, it's not in a college town. It is in the heart of the city. It's in downtown Atlanta. So you literally go into the stadium, and if you ever seen a night game at Bobby Dodd, at that time you had a Bell South, or AT&T, their corporate headquarters, one side of the stadium. I think it's the East Stands, or West Stands, Coca-Cola headquarters on the east side, in northeast side of the stadium. And then you had Turner, you know, on the north, I think completely north side of it. So you literally have these major corporations that are all right there. And that was one of the selling tickets. I knew I was going to have a chance to play. So, you know, that excited me there. If I get a shot to play, it's big time college football. I do want to do that. But then folks really hitting that this is a 40-year decision. And at that time it was 1 in 6 of all GT grads were millionaires. So you know, I run numbers. That's one thing I've always been good at is math. So, like, even if this football thing didn't work out the way I wanted to, I knew I had the chance for some lifelong earning potential that you know, I think if you play this game long enough and get beat up, you want a chance to make some decent money in this life. So all of those things factored in. At the end of the day, I chose the B versus the Sebastian, the Kane. And look, I was excited about it. One thing I felt being a football player, and not just a player, but a student of the game, I looked at all those programs and I saw how those programs had started treating some of their coaches. And I felt many of those coaches were on their way out. I will tell folks the only reason why I didn't end up at LSU, my favorite coach during the recruiting process has a powerhouse right now in Alabama. And there's a reason why. Nick Saban excited me on so many different levels in having a conversation because, one, he respected my ability as a student, but also as an athlete. And literally told me, hey, this is my plan for you. This is how I see you doing it, playing the game. And it's interesting, you know, guys who kind of, you know, fit my physique or, you know, body type, the way they play, it's the same way he wanted me to play, you know, in Baton Rouge. So I watch. And, you know, you have some folks who are just inconsistent in what they say. This dude is like, huh, this is what it is. You're going to have a chance to compete, which is what I love to do. And other coaches, I just felt they didn't have a shot. Now, look, it took 4 years, but even my coach ended up getting fired when I went to Georgia Tech. So all of those things kind of factored in, but I settled in that going to Atlanta, doing the Tech thing would probably position me best for life, and that's why I went. In terms of the sacrifice side of things, man, I remember being in high school, and they used to, the running joke was that I worked at the school too because I probably was the first student there every day and the last student to leave. During lunchtime, I was, you know, reading and trying to catch up because I had teachers who were like college professors who showed no mercy on homework checks. They didn't ask for me to turn stuff in. We got cold called, and basically you have to show what you know. So you know, it was always preparing, and I find myself like that today like I will still I make time. I know people, a lot of folks that they have to find time. I believe in making time. So not so much just multitasking. I think whenever you have a little break to get ahead, you know, take advantage of that. And that was really how I began to, I think, set up a process to be successful at Tech, because that was a beast within itself. I think some of those folks took pride in sending folks home saying that they didn't cut it.
Right. I love the fact that you called it a 40-year decision. I'm going to have to use that a lot more, because a lot of times, obviously, as we continue to be able to engage Watkins men, they need to all look at it as a 40-year decision. We look at the one guy who recovered, and you mentioned it earlier, the fact that you blew your knee out and came back to be bigger, better, stronger, faster. We think about Adrian Peterson did it in 6 months. This is the first guy I've seen with a total blowout of his knee come back and do it in 6 months, plus or minus. And so in doing so, and all the trials and tribulations and the things that from the time that I met you as a high schooler, even up until now, how has the Watkins Award had an impact on your life and the things that you've had to face going through?
What I want to kind of talk to first is the brotherhood, because I think at times folks don't understand and appreciate it. For many of us, I hate to use this term because someone may think I'm trying to sound, whether it's like, you know, arrogant or bragging, but we are like the unicorns in our community. And a lot of times you almost feel a sense of pressure or maybe an inability to connect with folks, because many people can only deal with a piece of you. And understand what I'm saying here. When I'm with my teammates, you know, they can deal with that football, you know, ball side of Darryl. But when I'm in a classroom, I got folks who only could deal with my mind. They care less about, you know, what I really love to do, and that's play the game of football. So now you've accumulated a group of individuals who can. Dude, I know some of our conversations, whether at the summit or at Watkins meet, we can jump on any topic that's going on and not miss a beat. And to when you have that level of, you know, I'm going to say mental stimulation, that like, man, I got to stay on top of my game, because I know that there are dudes out there like me who I believe are your natural leaders, of folks that you can give Fortune 500 corporations to, and they are going to change the game. You know, I got to give a shout out, probably talk about it. Whether like a guy like a Myron, you know, Myron Rowe. Folks, oh, you know him? Like, yeah, that's one of my Watkins brothers. Just the ability to connect with people like that is like, hey, we're out here. And we know we have the ability to change the game, not just for today, but for everyone that's coming behind us. And so it's actually give us a jump start, a head start to really change and make this shift as to what, you know, college sports and even high school and peewee sports could be. So, you know, I would say that's my biggest thing I'm most appreciative for of Watkins.
That's great, man. Thank you very much for saying that. Now, you know, when I take a look at some of the great things you've done, being engaged with what we're doing and continue to lead our younger Watkins men as we continue to move forward. You know, when we had our Watkins alumni retreat in Houston, Texas, you showed up bells and whistles to try to teach some of those young guys how to do it and try to show some of the older guys how it should have been done. And so looking at what you're doing now and some of the things that you've done recently that I don't know about, I know that, you know, you're a true thespian. You know, you're a musician. You continue to minister through music. You continue to give back to the community. You're an entrepreneur. Obviously, you've done a lot in the corporate America to actually continue to lead your corporation to the next level. Let's talk about some of the things that you're doing today.
That's probably, I think, the craziest deal in me. Well, I feel like I just want to do everything all the time. But you kind of hit on one of the things I focus on right now. I'm doing music, church boy, always been a church boy, but now, you know, play, sing, do that thing. And then on the corporation side, I'm going to say, which has been taking the most of my time, I'm going to say the pandemic has probably been a lifesaver for me. It has helped keep me somewhat sane, because I now have more time, not as much getting dressed all the time every morning, but my role at my job is to I'm a strategy manager, and really what I'm focused on right now, I work at Entergy, a Fortune 500 utility company servicing the Gulf South. Electrification, it is the new wave. I don't think people realize it, but my job is to figure out anything right now that's being powered through fossil fuels and understand if there's an ability to directly power it through electricity. I see the way Tyrone looking down there. So guess what, dude? I am plugging up ships down here to the power grid. You know, that's a product that was listed out. So if you think about anything that's potentially coming with EVs in that world, it is trying to electrify as much as possible. And that's what I've been trusted to deliver on for a pretty successful corporation. So, I mean, that's exciting. It's a chance to compete again because it puts us in a different space. It's no more just, hey, we just have to make sure the power comes on. It's like, no, you have to get out there and convince people that you are the best option for what they want to do, whether it be meeting their sustainability goals and reducing emissions or reducing some of their operations costs. Because guess what? Some electrical components just have less to service and maintenance versus internal combustion engine components. So that's when you think about the motors in cars or the motors in other equipment. So all of that stuff has been kind of fun. And dude, it's the result of being in an ultra-competitive environment of all levels of football, but also being in that same type of competitive environment from an academic standpoint.
Darrell Richard, one of the best defensive linemen to come out of Destrehan, going on to Georgia Tech, and then playing for the great Bill Belichick, but making the biggest impact off the field in his community, in his company, with his business, in his church, with the youth. I'll turn it back over to Tyrone Tate. I can't say anymore.
Man, you know, Darrell got me speechless. You know, he's always been an intellectual. I mean, there's no doubt he would come down to the restaurant and he and I would, you know, just talk about things in life. And also, you know, what was going on in school. He would help, you know, me to get caught up with, you know, the type of dynamics that were changing in corporate America. But Darrell, I hear the music coming up. The show is certainly never long enough for someone like you. Look here, I want you to tell your moms, I'm coming down there. I want some more crawfish.
You happy birthday, Tonda! Happy birthday, Tonda!
Today is her birthday.
Well, happy birthday to my girl, man. Man, she has come by my house a couple of times with 10 pounds, 15 pounds of crawfish, man. And I'm telling you, I'm a fan now. So I'm coming to New Orleans so I can, New Orleans, and give
New
me
Orleans.
Some crawfish. Well, thanks again, Darrell. We certainly appreciate you, man, and give our best to the family, man, because, I mean, it's truly been a blessing to have someone like you affiliated with the National Alliance of African American Athletes.
Thanks for having me. I'm sending y'all another one in about 17 years.
Let's do it now, Rashad!
I think that's a 57-year plan. You were talking about
four. No, I'm talking about my JR, man. I got
one in training.
That's what I know. I added 17 to that 40-year plan at Georgia Tech.
A.K.A. Daddy Rich.
Yeah, Daddy Rich. Yeah. Thank y'all for having me, man.
Thank you, brother. Thank you. Love you.
Everybody, our best down there.
Yes, sir.
Okie doke. Well, you've heard it. Your son and I have been around a long time, man. But, you know, for guys like Darrell Richard, he does a lot for us. So thank you very much for being with us today. Thank all of our sponsors who always are there for us. You know, certainly we want them to know that we love them as well. Hey,
let's
call it. Hey, right? Mr. Pierce up.